All right, so welcome, sir, to my podcast. And I want to pick your brain a little bit on some things here. This weekend is the weekend that the Chicago Bulls is honoring a couple of their players. I'm sure you've heard about it. And it just kind of started taking me back to the Michael Jordan era. And I was a huge fan of Michael Jordan. I remember being a young girl and thinking we've never seen anyone play like this. And I thought it was a great example of this concept of greatness. And so I just wanted to kind of have this dialogue and pick your brain about it and see what you thought about it and get your thoughts on what made him one of the best players to ever play the game. I mean, we see LeBron James, who was a great player, but there's something about Michael Jordan that was just different. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
So my first thought is that I kind of equate Jordan to LeBron and LeBron to Jordan in terms of greatness. And I'll tell you, one of the things that equates them and puts them on the same par for me, still think Jordan's the GOAT, but puts them on the same level, is they both had discipline. They both had outstanding athleticism and ability. But here's the part that most people don't understand with LeBron and with Jordan. They both were incredibly fundamentally sound at every aspect of basketball. Now, that some of that comes from discipline, but some of that comes from working on the right things in your discipline. Like, there are guys that can shoot the ball well. There are guys that can pass the ball well. There are guys that can dribble well. Jordan and LeBron did almost everything really, really well. And part of that, I'm sure, was because they worked on it. They were disciplined. But people think of Jordan, Air Jordan. What people really should think about is discipline and fundamentally sound Jordan, because those are the things that took his athleticism to another level.
Now, that's a great point. So I see what you're saying. You're saying that some of it was just inherent giftedness. I mean, we all can see that. But you think that the fundamentals of their game, they accomplished that through just discipline, mm-hmm. through just over and over and over practicing, repeating the same shots, the same drills.
Sure, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so a good example that's on the kind of almost the other side of this is Dominic Wilkins. Great player in his own right, incredible scorer, incredible athlete. But his scoring came mostly from his athleticism. Dominic, and I watched the game, you know, I studied the game, I played the game when I was younger, and he was an incredible athlete that could jump real high and had a decent shot. But there are other areas of his game, one of them being dribbling, that kind of lacked. Now, he overcame that because he was such a great athlete, but that's just one example of a part of, and this is not to disparage Dominic, because he's a Hall of Famer and was a great player.
Of course, yeah.
But he was not on the, athletically, he was probably on the same level as Jordan. But fundamentally, he was not.
Okay, I get that. So, let's establish that when it comes to greatness, that one of the things that has to happen is that you have to be disciplined.
I would agree with that.
Right? 100%. And so, discipline in that you are willing to do the same thing over and over repeatedly. Now, the benefit of that is, and we see this with people like Mark Zuckerberg, some of these other people are coming forward and saying, I think Obama did this, like, you know, I only have like 5 suits, mm-hmm. or I wear the same color every day. Steve mm-hmm. Jobs did this, mm-hmm. in that when you're disciplined, you're not losing energy.
Efficient.
You're extremely efficient. Mm-hmm. You're not losing energy on things that don't matter.
That's
right.
True.
So that is one of the inherent benefits of being disciplined. But when it comes to, you know, athletics or with Michael Jordan, you're saying that that discipline, just constantly doing something over and over and over, just developed a certain skill set.
And doing the right things over and over again. That's the key.
Okay.
So you'll find that guys that can shoot the ball well, they practice shooting. It's kind of like with golf. People who can drive the ball well practice driving. They don't practice it because they like to see the things that they do well. Sure. They don't practice the things that they're not very good at.
Okay.
So they end up doing really well at a certain aspect of the game, but they don't have the full breadth of the game mastered because they didn't have the discipline to practice those. Because it's humbling to practice the things that you're not good at. But on the other side of that humble or humility is, once you do practice, and see that you're getting better,
yeah,
then everything opens up for you. And I think Jordan and LeBron, if I was a fly on the wall, I would say they practice all aspects of the game, which is why they didn't really have any chinks in their armor, so to speak.
Got it. So I think that what I'm hearing you say is that for the rest of us mere mortals that are trying to get to greatness, one, discipline is hugely important.
Yeah.
But what's also important is being willing to assess and see where your weaknesses are, mm, and being willing to commit to that over and over and over and over again and develop that skill.
That's a great
So when point. I'm thinking about greatness, using that example that you just gave about Michael Jordan, if you're not good at let's just say dribbling. I think you said that was Dominique, that he wasn't a great dribbler. If he would have just been able to do, and we've seen Kobe and we've heard the stories about Kobe, just, I remember someone saying that they were in another city where Kobe didn't even live, and they heard a ball bounce at like 4 o'clock in the morning. They went in the gym and it was Kobe.
Yeah.
It was in Florida.
Yeah.
He had taken his kids to Florida to Disneyland, and before he went with them, he was in their gym.
Sure.
That would have been the magic, right?
Yeah.
He was in their gym, not even playing there, but he was playing.
Right, right.
Kobe, he was Kobe practicing,
yes,
developing the skill set.
Yeah.
So greatness requires definitely being able to assess where you're lacking.
Mm-hmm.
And to develop those skills.
Sure.
When it makes sense. Now, for some people, when you think about like being a CEO, and this requires a level of discernment, if you can surround yourself with people, mm-hmm, that can do certain things and you don't need to learn them. But some things you're just going to have to learn.
You're going to have to.
Like one of my Achilles heels is public speaking.
Sure.
And so just listening to what you're saying, that's what's being triggered in my mind. If you want to get to a certain level of greatness, you're going to have to do that. And to get good at it, you're going to have to consistently practice it over and over and over and over again.
And you should think in terms of getting great at it, not just getting good at it, because that's
like
where
that
discipline,
yeah,
takes you. Discipline isn't looking
great
for good.
That's key right there.
Yeah.
So I hear what you're saying. All right, so we got discipline, and discipline being able to make you more efficient.
Sure.
It's also going to make you better at things that other people aren't better at. And this is what greatness is. Greatness is breaking away from the crowd. Greatness is being able to separate the men from the boys.
Right.
And so discipline can do that.
Yeah.
What else do you think?
Well, let's not gloss over ability. And I say that because you have to know where your ability and where your strengths are from the start.
Okay.
So Michael Jordan, there's all these stories about how Michael Jordan was cut at his high school. Not quite true. He was a junior and he didn't make the varsity, so I guess you can call that, but he was still on the junior JV team. But from an early age, and let's just use LeBron as an example instead, from an early age, people were saying LeBron in the 7th or 8th grade could have been a professional basketball player. So he had harnessed his skills later on, but he had some physical gifts that I'm sure he and other people recognized that needed to be channeled properly.
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't have made sense for LeBron to try to be a baseball player, because his skill set didn't lend itself as well to baseball as it does to basketball, even football. He probably could have been an all-pro football player with his physical gifts. And I'm mentioning football because he did play it in high school and he was good, but he recognized where his true gifts were.
Sure.
In basketball. And we all can figure out what our gifts are if we just really sit down and think about the things we do, the things we do well, the things we like to do. Typically, sure. What you love,
yeah,
is what where your skill set is.
That's true.
So you always talk about how, you know, you always you have this thing with numbers and you're good at numbers. Well, that's one of the things I can say humbly, that from an early age I knew numbers pretty well. I could do the number thing as well as most people around me. So where did I end up?
Yeah.
So I tried to, and this is different from athletes, I tried to go into a field and train myself through schooling, et cetera, in an area where I could maximize those skills.
That's key.
Right.
Just being able to figure out what you're good at early on, mm-hmm. and then finding an environment that will cater to those gifts and allow you to thrive.
Yeah, and that's where we see, and unfortunately we see it a lot in the African American community, we don't harness and view skills that our kids may have in areas that aren't necessarily mainstream or accepted, and someone may be an incredible ballet dancer.
Yeah.
You don't see us necessarily funneling our kids all the time to those type of things, where that might be where their gifts are.
Sure.
So it really is helpful when you have people that are watching you, mentoring you, that say, you know, that's your thing.
Yeah, and to your point, I mean, that is the role of parenting. The role of a parent, especially in this new environment that we're moving to, where it is largely competitive when it really shouldn't be, because everybody has a certain skill set or gift that they are to offer humanity, mm-hmm. and there's going to be room
for everybody.
It's going to be room for everybody, sure. But until we get to that place where everybody honors and respects and understands that, it is very competitive right now for mm-hmm. schools and for certain jobs and things of that nature. So it behooves you as a parent to watch your child and see what they're being drawn to,
sure,
and what they're good at, and don't dismiss it, as you're saying, that some people, you think like, oh, well, you're not going to be able to make a living being a ballet mm-hmm. dancer, right. when they could be the next
Baryshnikov,
yeah. right? And so we have to just kind of, you know, stop and just say, what is my child good at? And then I'm going to nurture that. And I'm going to let that be the thing that creates the child's future, as opposed to allowing where we've been, the world to kind of dictate what the child's future becomes.
Absolutely.
Right? God created the child. God gave the child the gift. Mm-hmm. Parents just need to pour into the gift and nurture it. And the rest will just kind of take care of itself.
That's true.
So you're giving some really good points.
Well, let me flip it back on you now.
Okay. Yeah.
So I've mentioned discipline and ability as being key components of greatness.
Sure.
From a spiritual perspective, what would you say is another aspect of greatness? And just dig deep in, and if you need to pause and think for a second about it,
okay.
dig deep and say, what spiritually is a component of greatness that we ought to think about? Because I think that's important, and that is your area of expertise, spirituality.
Well, I'll say this, kind of what I was just speaking to about understanding, well, you started the conversation about understanding what your gifts are, and I'm mm-hmm. saying that a parent watching their child and just really having the understanding that God gives gifts.
Mm, that's good.
And so those gifts need to be honored. And if you honor those gifts, everything else is going to take care of itself. So I think that's very important. And that is a spiritual perspective on how to get your child to greatness. And that's just something I think we haven't really been thinking in terms of that. We start thinking attorneys are great, or or people are born just great. And that may not 100% be the case. There are probably far more Michael Jordans out there, but because they didn't have the discipline component or because they didn't have the parental support, people to recognize it and to put them in environments where it's going to take off. I mean, we've all seen the video on, the special on Netflix where Michael Jordan's mother, I mean, she was really, really gangster about being involved in his process. And a lot of parents just, oh, my son plays basketball. They aren't really watching. They aren't really paying attention to it. They aren't really doing what they could be doing to kind of get that gift to kind of.
Yeah. Especially if they aren't good early on.
Yeah.
Now, if you have a gifted kid, there's an ego part of a parent that's probably just going to get involved even more because they could see, oh, this could be something really big.
Sure.
But if and most kids aren't great early on, but most kids will show some aspects of skill in whatever area that says, that's my gift.
Yeah. And I think that some parents along those same lines, they want to get involved with the thing that they want the child to have. So they're nurturing the wrong thing.
Vicarious.
Right.
Yeah.
So maybe you were a ballet dancer.
Sure.
And you want your daughter to be a ballet dancer, but she really is the next WNBA player.
Yeah, you see that a lot in sports.
Yeah,
see that a lot for failed, I don't want to say failed athletes.
Yeah, no,
exactly. But athletes that weren't.
You're trying to nurture mediocrity.
You're trying to nurture.
And it's because only going to go so far.
That's true. That is
so
very
I think
true.
That is a spiritual
that's very true.
Well, aspect.
You know, but you know, that happens outside of athletics too. You find an attorney.
No doubt.
Is going to kind of guide his child toward, or he or she will guide their child toward being an attorney.
That's right.
And political
or
science.
Even I've seen it with my whole family is a police officer. And
right.
I think now somewhere in there, somebody probably really wanted to be something else.
Well, think about personality types.
And this is what happens when you don't honor.
Yeah.
And this is why I wanted to kind of belabor this point a little bit. When you don't honor the spiritual aspect of life. Yeah. So now your grandfather was a cop. Your father was a cop. You're a cop. You either hate your job or you're fearful. Now you're trigger happy. Mm-hmm. And now something bad happens to you on the job. Maybe you harm someone else accidentally because you were never supposed to be doing that.
Sure.
And so that is a spiritual
spiritual concept
that we have to stop and realize God gives the gift.
Yeah.
And other people don't get to decide what that gift is. And sometimes it's more than one gift.
Yeah.
There are people that are multi-talented.
Yeah, that's true.
But the thing is, you have to be able to recognize, what is this person, what is my child in this case, doing better than everybody else?
Yeah.
And you want to cater to it, even if it's something that maybe you don't find acceptable. Or, I mean, we've all heard the stories of the poor artists where they're like, well, my dad won't pay for me to go to art school. And so he ends up over here in some 9-to-5 job, just depressed and just...
Yeah.
You know, not living a fruitful or fulfilling life because what he really wanted to do was paint.
Yeah.
And that is just a failure of humanity.
It is.
And that is probably 90% of people on this planet right now. They're doing that.
Just misguided.
That's right. And that is why and I may be off on my stats. That may be triggering for people. But it's a lot of people that are way off the path that God intended for them to be on. And that is why everybody's on Xanax and everybody's violent and people are shooting up people in the store. And it's just because they aren't honoring their unique path and letting those gifts lead them to the life that they were supposed to have.
Well, you
That's
mentioned
very key.
It is. And you mentioned it earlier. Part of the issue with getting on the right path is almost throwing out the, I got to make $1 million. I got to make a bunch of money.
That's true.
Because typically people, and I'll use attorney as an example, typically people will kind of funnel their skill set toward things that'll make a lot of money. When I believe, and I think you would agree with this,
no
that
doubt.
If you are in your gift,
I'm jumping up and down in my chair, right?
Ultimately, even beyond the financial aspect of it, having a full life and doing what you're supposed to be doing in life, I think generally it pays off in financially and in more ways than that.
The gift leads you to abundance, whether that's financial.
That's
and more times than not, it is financial.
It's a great way
but
to
if
say.
It's not financial, abundance means that I am completely and totally satisfied and happy with my life? And you would trade $1 million for that.
For that, absolutely. You know? And that is absolutely true. But I also feel like when you are working in your gift,
prosperity
is a part of it. Financial prosperity is a part of it.
We are getting this all wrong.
Yeah, we're getting it turned around.
So another thing that popped into my spirit when you asked me that question that I think is important and that I think is a spiritual concept, and I think it was true for Michael Jordan, mm-hmm. definitely true for Michael Jordan, and this is where a lot of us are missing the mark on greatness, is that greatness, how can I say this? People that are great have vision.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so when we think about Michael Jordan, his vision was, and I'm going to take a little bit of liberty here, to be the greatest player that ever played. I'm sure that was part of his vision. But outwardly, we knew that his vision was always to get his team and his city to the championship.
Right.
He never wavered on that.
That's
he
true.
Was locked. He was focused on his goal. He had a vision for himself. He had a vision for his team. And I mean, he was on it.
Yeah.
Like nothing was going to get him off of that.
Sure.
And I think that also is separating the men from the boys or the girls from the women. in that, you know, greatness requires that you have vision.
It does.
Have to have a future image of where you're trying to get to. And he definitely had that. And I think that oftentimes we're failing because, one, we think that greatness is only for certain people and they are born that way, but greatness can actually be cultivated.
Mm.
You may not be Michael Jordan. Everybody may not know your name across the entire world, but greatness is great and people are going to recognize greatness. You can be great in your community. You could be great in your Fortune 500 company.
Yeah.
And so in addition to, we said discipline, knowing what your gifts are and your skills are, it is also very important as just a human being that you have some level of vision or direction for your life or what you're trying to accomplish.
If
you want to be great, that is very important.
That's a great point. And the vision for Jordan and people like Jordan, I think, is a little more focused than the average vision. And I'm going to use Allen Iverson as an example, who in his own right was a great player. Leaps and bounds beyond what a guy his size should have been great. But I think his vision on greatness wasn't as focused as a Jordan, as a LeBron. I think he just saw basketball as a way to get somewhere, and his vision was to be a great player. But I don't think it was uber focused like a Jordan, like a LeBron, like a Kobe. And it showed when you're at that famous scene where he talks about practice.
Yeah.
Now there was some validity to some of what he was saying in that interview or in that press conference, but the underlying theme of where he was questioning practice, greatness typically doesn't question practice.
That's right.
And that goes
back to
focus.
Discipline.
That goes back to discipline.
Yeah, that goes back to discipline and vision.
And vision.
Yeah.
Vision and discipline, that's an explosive pair when
yeah.
you combine them.
Yeah. And so I think that is very important. And I think that whether you're Dr. King or whether you're Gandhi, whether you're Mother Teresa, these people get up every day. They got one focus and they're locked in on it from sun up to sundown. When they go to bed at night, they're going to ask themselves, how close am I to my vision?
Yeah.
What else do I need to be doing to make my vision come to life? Come to fruition. They live their life around a goal.
Yeah.
What they want. And they just never let go of it.
Never let go of that. And it's interesting because this is almost trickling over into, and I'm going to stop it at that place, trickling over into leadership, which those two alone aren't just what you need for leadership. You know, my thing about leadership is vision, discipline and communication.
Sure.
And it's kind of interesting that we're dabbling in this with this conversation, but this is going to probably surprise you that I don't think, generally speaking, Michael Jordan was a great leader.
That is interesting.
Because I think there was a part of him that led by example, but the way he communicated and galvanized people, I don't think it was a leadership style that is necessarily effective.
I would agree with
I
that.
I think the He's leader
kind of, he was known, not my words, yeah. the public's words, for kind of being a jerk.
He was. And yeah. I think the leader was actually Phil Jackson.
Yeah.
Phil Jackson kind of made everything work. Communication, vision, yeah. discipline.
And leaders have the ability to galvanize. That's another call. We'll do
but
that one for
we
sure.
We will. Yeah, we will. But yeah. but a couple of these components are part of leadership.
Of course.
And you can have them and not be a leadership. That's my point, is you can have those and be great and have a vision.
Yeah, and you can be a leader and not be great.
That's exactly right. Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. They are kind of the same yet different, mm-hmm. but they kind of ride shotgun together.
Yeah, they're cousins.
I mean, if you can kind of, you know,
if you can meld them.
Yeah, yeah. Could you imagine? Yeah.
Then you
how
have
different?
Something.
Then you really have something.
Yeah, then you really have something.
So I'm trying to think of what else about Michael Jordan who I mean, he was just such a beautiful player to watch. Just, you know, his body was so lanky, mm-hmm. just the way he moved, he was just so graceful. I personally, and you know me, I think that so many athletes are doping, but yeah. I think that Michael Jordan was one of the few athletes that achieved greatness without...
Yeah, he never looked like a dope.
He never looked like... He just...
He just was lean and muscular.
He was lean.
It looked natural. But yeah. The interesting thing about greatness is that even without the championships, I think we still would have recognized greatness in Michael Jordan. I think the championships created a legendary status for him. Sure. But the greatness was always there because people consider him the greatest player of all times, even though Bill Russell had way more championships. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So to me, it's about the championships, but it's bigger than the championships. It's bigger than just saying I was 6-for-6 in the finals. Well, Bill Russell won 11 championships. That's more championships. But there was just something about him physically, discipline-wise, fundamentally, that said, wow, this is different. And you said it well. You said, when we looked at athletes prior to Jordan, we didn't see this.
No.
This was just something.
Something was different about him.
Yeah.
And, you know, this leads me into my next component that I think greatness has. Let's see, we said discipline, mm-hmm. right? And we said...
Ability.
Ability and knowing what your gifts are. And then we said vision.
We said
like
vision.
You have to have a... You got to know where you're trying to get to. And you got to get up every day pretty much only focus on that vision.
Right.
I think that what Michael Jordan had and what we started to see emerge in a very big way that older athletes didn't have, your Bill Russells, they had it, but they didn't have it like this new class of guys mm-hmm. that emerged around the late 80s, early 90s. Mm-hmm. This super athlete was that they had this level of heart.
Yeah.
They had this level of drive mm-hmm. that other athletes had it, but they didn't have to the level that like a Michael Jordan has it or like a Kobe Bryant has it. And so this is a tricky one for me because I think that that same level of heart and drive can kind of turn you into a machine or an animal. And so for the purpose of people listening, it's important, but it has to be balanced. It has to be modulated, right?
Well, you're talking about Jordan right now.
No doubt. Yeah, no doubt. And this is why you're saying he wasn't the best leader, because that same heart turned him into just almost like a ruthless tyrant because he was so focused on his vision and so focused on his goal. And so I don't think that that is the best way to get to greatness.
No, that's an incredible point, because when you think about what you're saying right now is... Michael Jordan, in a lot of ways, was a me guy.
No doubt.
I am going to be the greatest.
That's right.
Leadership pulls people along with you.
That's it.
And there's the distinction.
Yeah.
Michael Jordan was the incredible, great, super basketball player of our our era, yet he did not necessarily pull people along with. Now, again, this is not to disparage him completely, because his work ethic and all the things he did diligently, there's a component of that that kind of rubs off on people. Like his teammates, when they see him working hard, there's a leadership part of that, but the totality of leadership.
Sure, just leading by example.
Leading by example. Yeah. But the totality of leadership, I think he was lacking there.
No doubt. To be there. Yeah. And I think that is the double-sided coin of having that level of heart and drive, which I think that is definitely a component of getting to greatness. But, you know, we have this kind of offshoot over here of leadership that's kind of spinning that we'll talk about on another call. Sure. But, you know, leaders galvanize others. They realize that I'm not an island. It requires other people to get me to where I'm going, and they have respect and honor for that.
Yeah.
But from a Michael Jordan standpoint and just a pure greatness issue, it requires a level of heart that is uncommon. But I would just say, for people listening, make sure that it's modulated, that it's tempered, that it doesn't show up as being a jerk to other people and being off-putting. And so sometimes, and we know this is not me, we've seen what everybody said about Kobe Bryant and what they said about Michael Jordan, that they were just an island unto themselves. Yeah. And so just be careful with that. Have the heart and have the drive, but, you know, you want to balance that to where you're just not running over people.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because I would question whether Michael Jordan and maybe even Kobe or people like that were living fully abundant lives because of it. Yeah. They were so driven.
Right. They didn't have a moment's peace. That is not a good life. That's not what we're talking about here.
Michael Jordan's a billionaire, but you can almost sense that there's an emptiness there.
Sure.
You can
almost sense that. A level of distance. So let's just say heart and drive lead you to greatness, but you just want to be mindful that you just don't go too far with that.
You don't go too far with anything. Yeah, it's almost a challenge of humility versus heart, because you can still be humble and still be great, but when you really think about it, drive like that can kind of push humility aside. You're so driven sometimes when you're at that level. Humility can be a secondary thing for you.
Yeah.
And I think that will take you to a place of nothing else matters.
Sure.
And
I think that humility sits in our leadership pot.
It does. It does.
And they're definitely connected.
It does. Yes,
but we're talking about pure greatness here.
Pure
greatness requires heart, and drive. It does require drive.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a great point.
Wow. Let me ask you, because you followed him more than I have. We see that Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant, they just had a level of heart and drive that, like I said, is just uncommon. Yeah. What about LeBron James? Do you think he doesn't appear to me to be at that level, because he's not as hated, I'm just going to use that term, just because it would take me a few seconds to feel around for the right word.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem as hated as like a Kobe or a Jordan, for the reason that we just talked about. They just blew over people trying to accomplish their vision. What about LeBron?
It's real interesting that you are making that point, because I would agree, and I will tell you that there was a time when LeBron was hated. There was a time when LeBron seemed uber driven, uber hardworking, and I think he still is, but I think once he got to La La Land, to the Lakers, I think it became as much about his business and total life legacy as it is basketball.
Okay.
Because I can remember when he made the decision to go from Cleveland to Miami.
Remember
there was that big quote decision.
That. Yeah, I remember that.
He was a hated man. Even before that, but especially after that, he was hated. And everyone talks about, anybody that's ever played with LeBron talks about how hard of a worker he is, how disciplined he is, how uber focused he is. But there's a part of me now, and you know I love LeBron, that thinks when he went to LA, I think his focus became...
LeBron can do no wrong.
Here's where I think he did do wrong. Here's where I'm going to say I think he did do wrong. I think there is a part of him that lost that focus once he went to Los Angeles, because the story is that part of his reason for wanting to go to Los Angeles was that his empire could be expanded. His business empire could be expanded. Movies, he's into that. Production, all of that lifestyle thing.
Yeah, that's is what, interesting.
And if you think about it, he's been in LA for probably 5 years. Mm-hmm. That's probably when you started seeing a more, even more vocal LeBron. And he's, to me, he's way too vocal. So right. So he can do wrong for me.
Sure.
I love him as a, I can separate the player from the guy who just talks too much.
Yeah.
And he does. He talks too much, in my opinion. But I think if it feels like to me, that all started when he moved to Los Angeles. Now, they've won a title with the Lakers. He's won a title with the Lakers.
You know what? Yeah. Now, let me ask you this question about LeBron.
Yeah.
Well, first, let me just, because I just cut off. You didn't finish making your point. So, are you saying that LeBron is, he's not as, let me put it like this. Are you saying LeBron won't be as hated as like a Kobe and a Jordan? Because he stopped the path of just having just uber drive or just being uber driven and having that level of heart to where he was just running over people trying to accomplish his vision. Are you saying that his process stopped when he got to LA?
Well, I think it was a roller coaster, and it is a roller coaster for him. Okay. I think he was hated.
Yeah.
Then he won titles and everybody loved him and called him in some ways as great as, if not greater than, Jordan. And then as he became more vocal, I think there is a different type of disdain for him.
Sure. Now, I'm just talking about just like that disdain when someone, Steve Jobs is like this. Yeah. When those kinds of guys that achieve greatness, mm-hmm. they're so focused on their goals and on their vision that they exclude all else.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't know if LeBron was ever that way.
I think he was.
He was that way?
I think he was that way.
Are you saying that he did kind of change, though?
I think he kind of changed. And
I see what you said after he got to that that five-year mark, I think you said, where he wanted to expand his brand. Yeah. He let go of some of that.
Well, and the other thing is, this happened with Jordan and with Kobe, too. LeBron's now 39. Mm-hmm. When Kobe got old and LeBron Jordan got old, they weren't the steamrollers anymore. They were just basically average players. I would argue that at this advanced age, LeBron is actually better than Kobe and Jordan were at this age.
Really? Oh, at this age. Oh,
absolutely. Absolutely. But what my bigger point is that he's still not the LeBron of 10 years ago steamrolling people. He's still one of the top 10, 15 players in the league, but he's no longer a level above every other player. Just like when Jordan played for the Wizards, the forgotten years.
Yeah.
Jordan was at best.
Now, some of that, though, I think is just modern advancements in science and technology.
Yeah, some
that's going to allow those players to play a little bit longer.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But that's not even my point of comparing how he's better. My point is, even with those advancements, LeBron is not the LeBron of 10 years ago.
Sure.
So he's not steamrolling people athletically. So there's a part of the league and people that say, yeah, whatever. He's still there, but he's not steamrolling it. So why would we even spend much time? Same thing with Jordan when he was with the Wizards. Jordan was old and kind of ineffective when he was with the Wizards. He was okay.
Sure.
But that's not the same Jordan from the Bulls that was steamrolling people. So there was a level of, I don't want to call it forgiveness, but I think once they became human as players, people didn't have that level of hate anymore because they weren't steamrolling anybody. Kobe the same way. At the end of Kobe's career, Kobe was just a gun. He just shot the ball every time. It was not that good. People tend to just forgive that part of their career and forgive them for the past when they steamrolled people. Yeah. Because there's a level of, okay, he's getting old. Let's just lay off.
Sure.
So.
Sure. Yeah.
But I do feel like there was the first 10 or 12 years of LeBron's career, it was very similar to the steamrolling and take no prisoners type of careers that Kobe and Jordan enjoyed.
Now let me ask you this question: is the level of play for all three the same? Nah, we'll take. Do we know? I'll let you answer that. Is the level of play exactly what they accomplished?
Yeah.
Is it the same for all three?
Here's what I will say about the three. For a long period of time, there was just Jordan and everybody else below him. For probably 10 years.
Sure.
I will say that with LeBron, there was a long period of time. It was LeBron and everybody else below him.
I agree.
Kobe was great, but I don't know that there was ever a period in his career where I would say there was Kobe and everybody else was a step. Kobe was probably maybe the best for a few years, but there were years when Shaq was better.
But I don't think that was Kobe. I think that was just the timing of who was in the league.
Oh yeah, along yeah. With him. That's correct. That's true. Yeah, yeah that's yeah, true. Yeah. But I would still say that in terms of their elevated status, in terms of just players, mm-hmm. what they could do.
Yes.
I still put Jordan and LeBron at a tier that's above Kobe.
Really?
I do. Yeah.
Okay.
And Kobe was incredible. Kobe is a top five player that's ever played the game. But there was a different thing with LeBron. There was a different thing with Jordan, even more so with Jordan. But I'm telling you, when the first 10 years of LeBron's career, here's what people will say. People will comfortably say this. For 10 straight years, Jordan should have been the MVP of the league every year. But they just got tired of making him MVP. So he only had four or five. For 10 straight years, same thing with LeBron. There is no question, nobody questioned. LeBron should have been MVP for about 10 straight years. Kobe has one MVP. And that's probably what it should have been. He just wasn't at this tier above people like LeBron and Jordan. You get what I'm saying? He was an incredible player.
Do you think that any of that had to do with the fact that people just didn't like Kobe?
No, I mean, I know no. Kobe was revered. Kobe was revered. Now, everybody knew that he had a killer instinct. He was a lot like, in terms of personality, even the way he acted and everything. He was a lot like Jordan.
Yeah.
When you really think about
sure.
it. And there, while people didn't like that, I think they respected that.
Okay.
I don't think he was hated in that way where he wouldn't have won MVP. There were just people at the time that were more deserving of MVP. Shaq was... You can make a case that Shaq was as dominant during a period as Kobe was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I remember that. Yeah. I do remember that.
In fact, their three title years when they played together, you know who the MVP was all three of those years? Shaq, not Kobe.
Yeah.
So.
I think that some of that for Kobe, and I'm a Kobe fan, I think that some of that was the fact that he just was in the midst of some other great players yeah. that kind of emerged during his reign.
Shaq being one of them.
Yeah. Whereas Michael Jordan just really didn't have that.
No.
You know, he just didn't have that. He was just kind of a freak for his time.
Agree.
He was the first.
Yeah.
And so some of that can be just timing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see. You got heart and discipline that's required.
Heart
yeah.
and drive, yeah.
And we're definitely making the point that in the real world, you do need to balance it. You do need to balance your heart and your drive, because otherwise it will cause you to create enemies and it will rob you of your life. And when people don't like you, basketball is different. But for those of us in the real world that are working in corporations or working in communities, when people don't like you, it's just not going to work. It's completely different from being an athlete.
It'll catch up to you.
It'll catch up to you. So I just want to clarify that heart and that drive is very important, but you just don't want to come off being a jerk all the time like those people.
It's an interesting balance of heart and drive versus cutting corners, because you don't want to cut corners,
right?
Especially in the real world, but you also don't want to cut people. You don't want to slice and dice people along the way, because that slicing and dicing, it will ultimately catch up.
That's right. Yeah. You think even like Steve Jobs, he kind of had some problems with people.
Yeah.
I mean, he created something really great. He kind of got it started or got the ball rolling mm-hmm. on it. But he was really having some trouble.
He was.
You know, I think he was ousted from one of his companies at one point. He was, like, he just really struggled. I don't know his whole history the whole time. And then you wonder if the stress or... And this is me taking a little bit of liberty, but I don't think that I'm extremely off base here. I don't know him. I don't know his thought processes and how his life was. But just from the outside looking in, just reading what people have said about him, mm-hmm. sometimes when you're too driven, and you pointed to that a few minutes ago, and you lose your life and you damage all your relationships and you're just obsessed with accomplishing something... Yeah. It will rob you of your life in more ways than one. And that level of stress can kill you.
That's true.
You know, and so you almost wonder if that could have played a role
in
what happened to Steve Jobs. And that's just not a way to live. Yeah. So
balance
that's definitely
balance.
Not what we're saying.
Yes.
Even though we're talking about hard drive, you definitely want to have balance.
Yeah.
All right.
Especially in the real world. We're talking about greatness, but we're also trickling over into abundant and prosperous living.
That's
abundant
right.
and prosperous living includes balance.
It includes balance. Yeah. Okay. What else when you think about Michael Jordan being great? You know what? I know something that he had, and this is kind of touching on when we were talking about, we didn't really call it this, but really just having that level of self-knowledge mm-hmm. and knowing what your skill set is, mm-hmm. knowing what your gifts are,
mm-hmm.
very important. This is something that Michael Jordan had, and this is gonna take us down an interesting path, I think, in that Michael Jordan was as equally gifted physically
mm-hmm.
as he was intuitively or psychically.
Yes.
And that is important. And now question is, as I said, we're going to go down an interesting path with this, is he was a very intuitive player.
Yes.
He could anticipate mm-hmm. where the people were going to be, you know, just with the no-look passing. And those are very intuitive, or those
skill
are mental
sets.
Powers,
they are.
Right? And so, of course, we know that some people are born with mm-hmm. that more than other people, but I'm wondering if that's something that can be developed. It's an interesting premise.
That's a very interesting premise, because I would argue that you can develop it somewhat.
Yeah.
But I think to be at his level, it's innate.
Yeah.
I think you have to almost be born with some of that.
Yeah.
It's like aura. That's, we haven't talked about that, but Michael Jordan had an aura about him, and I don't know that was necessarily something that his career did for him. I think there was an aura about him that some of it was built by his legendary status, but there was just an energy around Michael Jordan that was different too.
Now that's interesting.
You know what I'm saying?
Do you think it was just charisma, or you think he had like an aura? And some people
You're
have
a spiritualist.
It. I know exactly.
You tell
what
me.
Well, you know, I never really thought of Michael Jordan as having an aura.
So we can almost separate LeBron and Jordan in that way. Jordan had
that's
this aura that LeBron doesn't necessarily have. You know what I mean?
Right. That's interesting. I don't know that I have the answer 100%.
Well, you work on that.
Yeah. I'm like, let's just walk down this path a little bit. Okay, so when you're talking about aura, you're talking about presence. Greatness.
And I don't know that you have to have that for.
You know what? Let's think about that for a second.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to have
presence. Does greatness require presence? And is presence is something that's...
You can even develop.
Yeah. Or is that assigned by God? Now that is an interesting concept, and we're gonna be cruising up on an hour here shortly, so we aren't gonna
go too far down.
We're just not gonna.
Yeah.
No, I want to, but we're just not gonna solve it. You know, in the next 10 minutes. But that is interesting.
Yeah, and my.
So that one almost. Let me think about this for a second. Let's think
while
about
you're
some
thinking.
Of the, okay,
I'm gonna say this. I'm gonna give you my
I'm
view on that.
Completely stumped. Go.
My view on aura and presence is that you cannot
develop it.
Develop it. It may be in certain people and it comes out, but I don't know that there's anything LeBron James could have done to have the aura and presence that an Oprah has, that a Jordan has.
Well, now hold on, because we've actually skipped ahead. I'm going to have to probably really edit this podcast. I know the people are about to get confused.
Okay.
Because my last point of greatness that I was going to bring here was the last requirement for greatness, I was going to say, is confidence.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And so now wondering if what you're pointing to, the aura or the presence, which sometimes could even be classified a little bit as charisma. I think mm-hmm. aura and presence is a little bit beyond charisma.
Mm-hmm.
But those are actually elements of confidence. And that was going to be my last point about this. That people that get to greatness, your Michael, they are uber confident, mm-hmm. oftentimes really too much in themselves, and mm-hmm. it can kind of come off as arrogance, but they're really confident in that they had the ability to get to the goal.
Yeah.
They had the ability to carry out the vision.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you stumped me a little bit.
I'm getting ready to stump you again.
You stumped me a little bit. So let me go back and try to clarify this, because I'm wondering if Michael Jordan, we just said, was extremely gifted physically,
mm-hmm.
but he was also extremely gifted mentally. And I'm not really talking about an IQ level, because I don't know that he was the smartest person in the world. He never came off that way.
Sure.
But I do think that he had a level of intuitive capability that most athletes don't have. If you watch him play, he can guess where the player's going to be
mm-hmm.
better than anybody on the court can do.
Yeah.
Better than anybody that has ever played the game.
Mm-hmm.
All the spinning, the timing, those kinds of things are very much mental.
They are.
Intuitive capabilities.
Strong mind.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And just that level of processing that just, you know, you and I know what intuition is.
Yeah.
Just being able to actually see what is not seen.
Sure.
To be able to almost, I'm going to use the word guess, that's probably not the most accurate word, to anticipate.
Yeah.
That's what intuition does. And Michael Jordan was a master at that.
I would argue that that is a component of intelligence.
Okay.
I would argue that. Yeah.
Well, and I think when I was saying IQ, like book
yeah.
smart.
Yeah,
I,
like
I
book
don't
smart.
Know what,
but
I don't know if he was
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
But just being able mm-hmm. to, and when I watch him play, the mm-hmm. spinning, Michael Jordan could lob a pass and he knew the guy was going to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Those are certain elements of mental processing that's calling in things like judgment,
yeah.
right? And so those are required for greatness. And then my question that I'm going to have to leave dangling here is, my gut is telling me the answer is yes. Can that be developed? I think you are born with a certain level of it.
I think it can be.
Can that be developed, and then how? You know, I will say this.
Ooh.
The 10,000 hours, the yeah. more you play, the more you do something, those levels of judgment and being able to discern and to make educated guesses and leaps, they're just going to be there. This goes back to what you were saying about discipline, mm-hmm. about doing something over and over and over. If you shot the ball 10,000 times,
yeah.
you typically are going to be able to guess what the ball can do. And so this is interesting conversation. I didn't know we were going to end up in this spot
yeah.
with this amount of time.
Yeah.
But for the sake of this podcast, I'm just going to sum up this particular piece of it by saying that greatness
Believe
requires it. Intuition.
Yes.
Or people that achieve greatness have a certain level of intuition. They are intuitive, and that requires a certain level of mental processing, mental capability, that as I hear myself talk, it can be developed.
Yeah.
One, it can be developed, and this is going to surprise everyone, by just reading. The
mm-hmm.
brain is like a muscle.
Like
when
a muscle.
You're reading, you're going to be able to
wow.
develop your capacity to think and process.
Yeah.
Right? Things like being quiet, being still internally, is going to develop your intuition. You're going to be able to hear things or see things, mm-hmm. right? We're talking about how to get to greatness. Mm-hmm. And so as I'm hearing myself think, I'm like, you know what? You can develop these other mental capabilities that are required to get to greatness, right?
Yes.
What else? Am I leaving things out?
No, you're not, but let me validate that even further
okay.
for you.
Thank you.
I'm going to say the name Tom Brady.
Okay, yeah.
He may be the most intuitive player in the history of the NFL. And he is unquestionably considered the greatest quarterback, if not the greatest football player in the history of the NFL. So let me validate for you the study part, the reading part.
Yeah.
Tom Brady is known for two things. Mm-hmm. Studying film, studying the playbook. Mm-hmm. Now, I know when you're talking about reading, you're talking about expansive reading.
But he's reading. When your mind develops, you're going to find those other mental processes starting to turn on.
Absolutely.
You know, and I've even said that to you. And this could have been what happened with Michael Jordan, why he was not as great of a player when he was younger.
Yeah.
Because you've heard me say to you that, you know, it was like something happened to me.
Yeah.
When I started reading a lot, yeah. I noticed that my brain changed.
It's a muscle.
The way I was able to see the world, the way I was able to think about things or to solve problems, like all of that, it kind of just went into high gear when I became an avid reader.
Yeah.
So you've known me for a long time. I wasn't always this way.
Right.
When I was really young, this didn't really start happening to me until I got to like mid-30s, mm-hmm. when I just started reading everything I can get mm-hmm. my hands on, not to develop my mind. I just wanted to learn.
Just curious.
And then I just looked up 5 or 6 or 7 years later and I thought, man, something happened.
Yeah.
And the reading is the only thing I can attribute it to,
sure.
because that's the only thing that's different about me.
Sure.
So I think you can develop
that. I do too. Yeah. And to finish my point on Tom Brady was not necessarily considered a great quarterback in the first 7 or 8 years of his career. Certainly not the greatest, even though he had 3 Super Bowl titles.
Sure.
The back end of his career, even when he was old, when he was 43 years old, he won a Super Bowl with Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
And I believe that he developed his intuitive skills over time to become the greatest player of all time. His physical attributes probably eroded the second half of his career, but he was a better quarterback.
Of course.
Is that?
The mental game matters.
And especially
and you can develop it. The more I'm sitting here and I'm
absolutely.
Like, wait a minute. Well, and I think what stumped me was I kept saying, can you develop intuition? But really what we're talking about is beyond intuition. We're talking about just developing your mental acuity and tapping into those other levels of processing that your brain can do.
Yeah.
That is required for greatness.
And for a sport, the reason I'm using Tom Brady as the example is because some sports, like basketball, there's a lot of athleticism that goes into it.
Yeah.
With football.
And it becomes muscle memory for
them. It does become muscle memory for them. But for football, there's a lot of mental part of that game. That's why coaches are really more important in football than they are in basketball.
Yeah, that makes
so
sense.
Tom Brady, while he may not be anywhere near the greatest physical athlete of all times mm-hmm. in football, mm-hmm. there's no question in anybody's mind that he's the greatest quarterback and arguably the best football player ever, because he developed some things that are not athletic that were equally important to him becoming as great as he is. And I think a big part of that is the intuitive part that he developed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Through the reading, through the studying.
That mental process.
Yeah.
Do you know if he was a meditator?
I think he was. I think.
There it is right there.
I think he is.
So let's go back for the people listening and let's sum up this little tangent that we went down. So I was saying that the premise started with the road to greatness requires intuitive capability, which that kind of we evolved to more like just a mental processing or just being able to activate a certain level of cognition that may not be readily available to your peers. That's what we're talking about, right?
Yes.
And so I think I was saying, I don't know if you can develop that, but as I started speaking, it started coming to me that 100% you can develop that. Now, intuition, I think, is an inherent skill that you are born with or not born with. But I do think that if it is there, everybody has it. Sure. But I'm just saying, you know, some people have it to the point where it is a marked gift or skill. Sure. I'm an extremely intuitive person.
Sure.
You are an intuitive person.
Sure.
But I know other people who are very capable that just aren't intuitive. They have sure. other gifts. That's just not their gift.
Sure.
But what I'm saying, the premise or the question I had was, if you're not born with a marked intuitive capability, can you develop it? And as we started speaking,
yeah.
the answer that I'm coming to, or the conclusion that I'm drawing, is 100% yes.
Yeah.
And you're going to do that by, we gave the example of just when you do something over and over and over and mm-hmm. over and over again, and this probably definitely coincides with reading,
mm-hmm.
that's going to just develop your mind.
Sure.
As your mind is developing, mm-hmm. as you're seeing all the different ways the ball can bank off the basket, yeah. it's doing something to your mind. And as that is happening, it's making you a better thinker, a better processor.
Yeah.
And then I also want to add in the microphone. And then I also want to add in the notion of quieting your mind and being meditative. If you are not a meditator, which of course I'm always talking about meditation on this podcast, but just being able to be in a meditative state or to quiet your mind, that is going to allow intuition to flourish.
Yeah.
Even if you don't have it as a gift, there are things that you can do to develop it. And the more I talk about it, I'm like, I've even I've seen books where you can read mm-hmm. how to develop yeah. intuition. I don't really sure. know those points here for this podcast, otherwise I'd give it. But find a book on
yeah.
how to develop your mind in general, but definitely how to develop intuition, because greatness does require that.
Yeah, yeah. You know what is a good basic example of what you're talking about with repetition and intuition, certain people having different levels, is language. Think about foreign languages that you've learned in the past.
Yeah.
We all have the capability through repetition to mm-hmm. learn a foreign language.
Mm-hmm.
You're more intuitive. You have the ability to learn a language maybe more readily than the average person.
Sure.
But that doesn't mean that the average person can't learn a foreign language.
That's
through repetition
yeah. Yeah.
and discipline.
Yeah.
But there are just certain people, because of their natural intuition. And I think that's the thing with language. That's why you have a propensity toward
sure.
language.
Yeah.
There's an intuitive thing that goes on that yeah. you develop.
Yeah.
And language is a good example of that. That's just what I will come to the conclusion of.
All right. And so the last point on the road to greatness
yeah.
that I wanted to hit on was confidence.
Mm.
Now, going back to what you were saying about Michael Jordan
yeah.
having an aura, which I yeah. was wondering, like, go ahead and flesh that out. I called it presence.
Sure.
Go ahead and flesh that out for us here.
So here's the interesting thing about confidence, which I do agree with you, that is a big component of greatness. The dark side of confidence is, and you see this in a lot of people like Michael Jordan, like LeBron James, there is an insecurity that's built into that confidence.
Yeah, that's LeBron,
Jordan had a commercial years ago that talked about failure.
Tiger Woods.
There's an insecurity
yeah.
that I don't know if it fuels that confidence or it offset or it creates the confidence, or whether the confidence maybe isn't as real as we think. But I hear a lot of the uber great people, you can see it. You can even see it now with Jordan. When he was at his Hall of Fame speech, there was a level of insecurity that he demonstrated throughout the speech that was just so clear. While at the same time,
that's terrible.
It was terrible. But at the same time, you can't be as great as he is and was, mm-hmm. and not have a high level of confidence. I'm going to make this shot. I'm going to make this shot.
No doubt. They have confidence in them, in their ability, and they have confidence. Yeah, no, they have confidence in their ability to achieve the goal.
So how do we incorporate or resolve the issue of there's also a level of
insecurity that drives them?
That maybe drives them. Because when you think about confidence and insecurity, they're almost opposites. But I think the guys like Tiger Woods, the guys like Michael Jordan, they have.
But they aren't actually opposites.
Okay.
This is coming to me as almost an issue of polarity.
Okay.
Right? Arrogance is really insecurity.
Okay.
Right? Because when you are confident in who you are, you don't talk down to people. Sure. You don't treat people poorly. Sure. You know what I'm saying? And so when you think about insecurity and confidence, they really are just two opposite ends of the same spectrum.
Sure.
Right? We'll say arrogance and insecurity. Yeah. Confidence is probably resting in the middle. Okay. So I think it really is kind of
a continuum.
I think it's a continuum. Yeah. I think it's an issue of polarity, right? Yeah, and confidence is really sitting right in the middle. So it doesn't shock me that a Tiger Woods or that a Michael Jordan or some of these other uber athletes will say that when they were kids, they just kind of didn't have confidence. And then it just almost birthed these monsters. Yeah. But I will say this. So even in there, let's look at that same spectrum there. So you got insecurity on one end and you have arrogance on the other.
Confidence
in the middle is confidence. Yeah. And I think they find that sweet spot. Mm-hmm. And they're able to just ride that wave. And that now I'm confident in my ability, and now let me tell you,
and it can sway.
Well,
it can sway to feel like arrogant sometimes,
and
it
can sway to feel like insecurity. And we see that with Michael Jordan.
Yeah,
yeah. When he's doing some of those speeches,
that may have been
things.
Your best like, point today.
Look at
the
that.
Continuum.
It's on a continuum, and so the sweet spot in the middle is confidence.
Yeah.
Confidence leads you to greatness. And those guys, and you know, they're human beings, and we appreciate their examples, so we're not really disparaging them.
Yeah.
Because being a human being is hard.
Yeah, they're
right?
not infallible.
And so we're using them to demonstrate this principle because they demonstrate it better than others in society right now. Everybody knows them, but we're not saying that they were perfect.
Yeah.
You know, by any stretch of the imagination. And it is very possible that their own insecurity drove them to these levels of greatness. We're not recommending that people do it that way. We're saying find the sweet spot of confidence because they did end up being 100% confident in their ability to carry out their vision.
Yeah,
this is the other thing that leads you to confidence. Going back to points... 1 and 2 mm-hmm. or somewhere in the beginning.
Discipline.
We talked about discipline and we talked about knowing what your gifts and skills are, that self-knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
When you do that, when you work those two principles, it's going to lead you to confidence.
Sure.
Right?
It is. And
you know there's nothing because I've done this drill over and over because I'm prepared, because in my case, I am an evolved speaker. I've done it so many times.
Yeah.
When I show up in the room, I'm confident.
Sure.
Nothing's going to go wrong here. I got it because I've prepared. I've disciplined myself. I've worked on it.
Yeah, which sometimes can be misconstrued as arrogance versus confidence.
Yeah.
So if I've done it a million times and I'm telling you right now,
I'm going to make this shot.
It's not that I'm being arrogant necessarily.
Right.
Sometimes it actually is arrogance. Some other aspects can be arrogance. But sometimes that's not arrogance. We see it as arrogance.
It's self-belief.
But it's confidence. Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
I know I'm the man for the job.
Yeah.
And that is what leads
that
to greatness.
Leads to greatness. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe that continuum is you started out insecure. You worked your butt off. You became disciplined. You had the vision. And it led to the confidence. And then sometimes just being a human, that confidence can actually trickle over to arrogance.
And it can. And
that
is not what we're recommending.
We're not recommending.
We're recommending staying right in the
And we're not judging because that happens.
Because true greatness, and we use athletes, and athletes are different.
Yeah,
but when you think about Martin Luther King,
Steve Jobs,
yeah. Steve Jobs was more like the athletes. I think he was a little bit broken, that he was just slaying people in his weight. Like, I don't think that's the way to get to greatness. We use the examples of those people because they are the most known.
Yeah, not just accomplishments.
Yeah, but you think about Dr. King, you think about other people that have really impacted humanity. They didn't have those levels of flaws that we know about. They had flaws. That's just what it means to be a human being.
Sure.
But they didn't have those levels of flaws, or at least they didn't have them publicly. We'll say that. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, I want to speak to this concept of greatness, in that greatness does not require you being famous, although it can sometimes lead to mm-hmm. notoriety.
Sure.
But you can be great in your home.
Mm.
You can be great on your small nonprofit job, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be this big, you know, this big grandiose thing, but the principles are still going to apply.
Yeah.
You know, greatness is greatness.
Absolutely.
And this is the path to greatness.
Yeah.
This is what greatness embodies or encompasses, but you can be great right there in your community, or right there in your Fortune 500 company, or in your law firm,
in your home. I think of single mothers who raise kids that end up going to college and doing great things.
Yeah,
she was great.
That's right.
She achieved greatness.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah.
And so being able to be disciplined as a mom, being able to develop your skill set. Develop
have a vision
yourself,
for your kids.
Have a vision for your family. The
yeah.
same principles are going to apply.
Absolutely.
Having the confidence to know, I can make great kids.
Yeah.
I can give them everything that they need to go out to the world and flourish.
Yeah.
The principles are going to apply no matter what environment that you're in. So that's what I would leave people with. And just consider yourself as an extension of consciousness, and know that you have the ability 100% to achieve greatness. You just have to figure out what that looks like for you in this lifetime.
What is Tom Bilyeu's ending comment?
What?
Be extraordinary. What
be
is
extraordinary.
He,
be
isn't that
That's
his? What he, how he ends his show?
Probably, I don't know. Oh, Tom Bilyeu?
Tom Bilyeu.
Oh, he does say be extraordinary.
Be extraordinary. He's saying
I was
great.
Thinking Belichick.
Oh,
wasn't
no,
Belichick just on the TV?
Yeah. Yeah, that's Bill Belichick.
Bilyeu. Yeah, he does say that. You know, I did have a question for you. Something else you said previously, it just triggered something in my mind about Tom Brady.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I'm not surprised that he is a meditator. You're going to find that meditation is also a path to greatness, mm-hmm. that kind of slots back into our skill set about developing mm-hmm. mental prowess and acuity.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he would be a good coach?
Tom Brady might be a good coach. And I say that because, generally speaking, the great athletes that depend primarily on athleticism. Now, they depend on intuitive skills as well. But a Michael Jordan, as intuitive as he is, if he couldn't jump out the gym and shoot the ball and dribble well, he wasn't going to be Michael Jordan.
Sure.
Tom Brady, I would attribute most of his success to his mind and his mental capacity. So I think he could teach the things that he did, and he studied the playbook. Guys didn't study playbooks in basketball. But I think because of that, even though I'm saying he's probably the greatest, he's the greatest quarterback of all time.
Yeah.
I think he would be a good coach. I think he has some components of galvanizing, and I think he would be a really good coach.
Good quarterback. Do you think he will? I said good quarterback, a good coach. He's already a
quarterback. I think he'll go into television and be an announcer and do well there. I think his mindset is such that he's one of those guys that'll probably do well at whatever he does.
Yeah.
He's just one of those guys.
Greatness excels. They figure it
they
out.
Do.
They have
they
the
figure
code.
It out. They figure it out.
Kind of like Deion Sanders is gonna do.
Well, Deion Sanders is the opposite of Tom Brady in some ways.
Yeah.
Deion Sanders was an uber athlete.
He doesn't have the mental.
I'm not going to say he doesn't have the mental. I'm just saying that he depended on.
He doesn't have.
The jury's still out on that. But one thing that is not refutable is that he had uber athleticism. That's why he's probably the greatest defensive back that ever played football. But I don't think that comes as much from a playbook as it does.
Well, this is another tangent to go down, but it's like you were saying that when you can rely on the physical that much, you don't develop the mental as much. And it's almost better to be like a Tom Brady.
It is almost better. But I don't want to disparage Deion by saying he can't.
I think Deion is going to figure it out because Deion, he's greatness personified. He's greatness. He is, and so he's going to figure it out. I can see Deion being the kind of a guy that once it clicks that I need to develop the mental game more, he's just going to do whatever it takes. Yeah. That's his nature.
Yeah.
He knows greatness.
For the most part, I'll agree with you.
Okay.
But one of the things we talked about early in this conversation is discipline and focus, and there are ways you can lose that focus. Yeah. Let me just put it that way. I'm not saying he won't, but I think there is an element of, I don't want to say this is what's happening with him, but I think you can
lost his focus.
So I think he's got the ability to get it back.
I think he's going to figure it out.
I'm rooting for him.
Because here's what happens. On that spectrum that we talked about, of insecurity being on one end and arrogance being on the other end.
Yes.
I think that same spectrum is going to be the thing that gets Deion to get his focus back.
Yeah.
Because he's not going to be able to handle the demise in the public eye. Well, and I think he's going to be like, whatever I got to do, that insecurity and that arrogance, that spectrum is going to kick in on him in a big way. And I think because he is great, he's just going to figure it out.
Well, and Deion is odd in that there is a level of arrogance with him, but there is a huge level of humility with him too. So I think he'll go back to the middle of the spectrum you talked about, which is confidence. Yeah. And I think he can figure it out. I don't know that because he relied so heavily on athleticism, that he will be a great, great, great coach. And I could be wrong. I think he'll be a good coach just because he's not going to do something a long time and not be good.
Okay, so let's make a wager. $25.
Okay.
I think that because Deion has the mark of greatness, he's going to be the kind of a person, once he figures out I've lost my focus, he's going to assess, kind of like what we were going back to point two, that point of self-knowledge. I think he's going to assess and figure out these are what my weaknesses are. Mm-hmm. And I think that he is smart enough to know I'm going to have to develop these. Sure. I honestly do think that he's going to get it back. At least I hope so. But let's make the public wager, $25. He's going to be back on top. I'm going to give him 24 months.
Well, he was never on top as a coach, so.
Well, I mean, he's going to be one of the top performing players in the next 2 years.
Or coaches, yeah.
Coaches. He's going to be one of the top performing coaches in the next 2 years. We just made a public wager.
Save your $25.
You don't think he's going to get it back?
Not in 2 years. No. We don't bet. We're not betting people, so let's not even put that out there. But I am very confident it'll take. If he gets it back, it's going to take longer than 2 years.
Do you think he'll get it back?
I absolutely think he'll get it back. This is not criticizing Deion.
That's exactly what it sounds like.
There will be
no Deion bashing in this house.
I'm not bashing him. I'm just being real about this. I'm being a realist. Coaching is different than playing.
I agree.
So I think he's so great that he'll get it back to a place where he could be a good coach. I just don't know it when you think about the Bill Belichicks, the Nick Sabans of the world. I don't know. And that's not criticizing him. Very few are at that level, at a coaching level. That's different. That's a different level.
But here's what greatness looks like. And I think that Deion is going to do it and if he's not thinking like this, he needs to. Yeah. Greatness is being able to sit down and say, okay, I'm failing in these areas. Yeah. This is what I need. Going back to what we were saying about discipline, about being able to understand what your gifts, what your skill set is. So if you've gone to the football coaching side and you know that my skill set was actually being able to understand what is happening on the field in real time. Mm-hmm. Being a coach is beyond that. It is building a team. It's recruiting. It's interacting with staff, with leadership at the university and parents. Mm-hmm. It's way beyond that. Mm-hmm. Greatness says, I'm lacking here. Mm-hmm. So I need to go back and develop this. Yeah. And I need to do it over and over and over and over again until I get just as good at this as I get as being able to decide what happens on the field in real time.
Sure.
I personally think that because Deion has tasted greatness, he has the potential to figure that out. That's what he should be doing.
I think he
will. Now the commercials and the all of that, he's just distracted. Yeah.
I think he will figure it out. Here's the only thing I'm saying.
Yeah.
And I talked about this earlier in the conversation, is when LeBron James, when people saw 6'8", 220-pound LeBron James, it's easy to see that's a basketball player. It's not as easy to see or know.
Yeah.
That coaching is the thing for someone. And I'm not saying it's not the thing for Deion. I'm just saying that I think his level of greatness will take him to a place of being effective. I just don't know that if it's going to be a thing where he's one of the great coaches. And I've told you this in the past, that a Deion Sanders, a Michael Jordan, it can be challenging for them to be coaches because of their physical gifts. Now I think Deion can figure it out, but there's going to be a level of I can't relate to that he's going to feel, because he was just an uber athlete. Now I think he'll figure everything out. I'm not saying that. I just don't know if
he'll get to the level of greatness. And I don't think he will, because I think he's starting so late.
Sure.
But I think he will be a very good and effective coach. I will go on record saying that, but he's just not going to have the 10,000 hours that Saban and some of those other guys have. Right. So
I know I agree.
It's going to be more difficult for him, for sure. It is. But I tell you what, Deion has working in his favor. And this is a negative that for some people ends up being a positive, and we just touched on it. There's something about that spectrum that we talked about. On one level is insecurity. On the other end, it's uber confidence or arrogance. The middle, the sweet spot, is confidence. I think that being at his age and knowing that he really can't do anything else.
Yeah.
And the fear of public failure.
Yeah. That's going to drive
him. It's the same thing that drove Tiger and Michael Jordan and some of these other great athletes. And I'm not saying that's the way to do it, but people are human beings, and human beings have dysfunction.
Yeah.
I think that that may be one of the things that gets him out of the death spiral and causes him to level off and keep it going. Right. Yeah.
That's just the
nature of who he is.
The other thing with Deion that will work to his advantage is that Deion has that aura we talked about earlier.
Deion has
that light and that presence that tends to attract people. He has it in a way different than Jordan. Jordan had it, and it didn't necessarily attract people, but people loved it. Deion has it in a way that tends to attract.
That's true. He's a likable guy.
But
let me just talk real quick about this. Man, we've gone way over time, because I don't want people to think that if I don't have presence, I can't be great.
Sure.
That's not true.
Sure.
We didn't flesh this out really, but what you're speaking to is that presence, that aura, is really charisma, and charisma is a direct offshoot of confidence.
It is, yeah.
That's that presence that you're talking about. When you see it with Deion, you see it with Michael Jordan, you see it with people that are great. They have 100% confidence in who they are and their ability to get the job done. Mm-hmm. That is what creates presence, generally speaking. Some people are born with presence. We're not talking about that.
We're talking
about the rest of us that weren't born with it. Confidence can trump that. Confidence can show up as charisma in a very good way. We're not talking about arrogance or anything like that. And when you are confident, when you have prepared, when you know what you're doing, you can show up in a room and that aura that you give off will draw people and people will be affected by that. And that's what makes greatness. That's
Muhammad Ali.
Yeah. That's what makes greatness.
The epitome of aura.
Aura in presence.
Yeah, in presence. Yeah.
All right, this was really fun. Mm-hmm. Thanks for stopping by my house today and visiting with me. We'll have to do this again. Thank you.
Give me the key and I'll come back.